and welcome to episode 37 of season 9 of Movie Reminiscence, the Daily Podcast, where we yippee-ki our way through the final two Die Hard movies, Die Hard 4.0 / Live Free or Die Hard, and Die Hard 5, A Good Day to Die Hard, 5 minutes at a time. I am so glad that I'm doing this 5 minutes at a time instead of a minute at a time. Joining me once again on to finish off this week is Niall McGowan of the Batminute, who happens to be a really, really good trooper that he's willing to come here and talk about these completely inconsequential scenes of this movie. So thank you for joining me again, Niall.
I'm happy to be here, Rob. How many times I've been on this show, I think I've only caught on now that your yippee-ki-yay is supposed to be like, oh, yippee-ki-yay. Like,
you only figure that out now. That's.
I think I was just always just like, oh, it's kind of doing the thing, but it was the inflection you did at that time. It really sounded like you're saying yippee-ki-yay. And I was like, oh, it does work. There's a thing there. So I was like, oh my God. Sometimes I'm slow on the uptick with certain things, as I think I've mentioned on the times of the back.
So you wouldn't have made it to your list of top five detectives.
No. That and the Shiva baby thing from the last episode, where I'm like, oh, sometimes I just don't get stuff until way, way down the line, where I'm almost like lying in bed at night and then shoot up. And I'm like, oh my God, that's what that is.
I usually come to my epiphanies in the shower, you know, in a place where you can't write down what you just thought of. You know, that's what it comes down to.
You could try writing it in the condensation, but then just and then hope that it stains enough.
That's
to
right.
Be left in the glass after, maybe.
That's right. Oh, I just thought of this great idea, and by the time afterwards, you just forget.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but yeah, I'm happy to be here. I'm always happy to talk to you, Rob. Just not. I wish it was under. And what a swing from like the last season, going from like freaking Saving Private Ryan to this. It's like a yo-yo in terms of quality.
Okay, exactly. No, I agree. And again, that's for me. You know, the minute movies by minute rule that once you start a franchise, you got to finish it makes it that I didn't really have much of a choice. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, to follow I'm someone who likes to follow the rules, so therefore, you know, I decided to do it. I toyed with so many different options of what I was going to do for. I was actually going to do Live Free or Die Hard normally, you know, minute by minute, mm-hmm. and then I was going to do 5, maybe as like a running commentary or something like that. And you know, over the course of time, it just evolved into other things. And then, you know, a friend of the show, Jay Cluett, just said to me, you know, you got to do it. You can't just do a commentary. You got to do something more. So I thought about it and, you know, discussed it with him also. And eventually came to the idea, wait a second, why don't I do this 5 minutes at a time? I'll get through it quicker. Have 47 episodes, you know, like a mini season trying to do this. And, you know, still be able to do things in the similar movies by minute way. The problem is there's. There's really not much to talk about here because it's just so boring. You know, it's like, I don't care.
I've got a handful of notes for this chunk, but considering it's 5 minutes, like I should have way more, but it is just like, it's just some action stuff happens. Who cares? it feels listless even in its delivery. So why, if it doesn't care about what's happening, then why should I?
More or less. Yeah, that's his problem. So episode 37 begins with Alec continuing to carry on about his past and ends with Jack and John taking cover from the helicopter. So we ended things yesterday with Alec telling them that he should have been a dancer after dancing around, kicking guns around, because that's what dancers do all the time, especially on movies that debut Valentine's Day. And then he goes, you know, he ended yesterday by saying, I could have been the dancer. And then he goes, I swear to God, but nobody supported me. And he goes, you two have been such a pain in the ass.
Maybe that's now perpetuating the theme we've found here of, like, people been brought up in toxic environments. Because we had, you know, the McLean's not been a hugging family, the whole, you know, but I'm your father, but I am your daughter. And now it's been like, I could maybe if Alec had, maybe if his parents had supported him, he would be a dancer and we wouldn't be in this scenario right now. Or at least it might have been, someone else there doing, kicking the guns away.
Yeah.
But he might have been, off and off doing some work for the Russian ballet. So it was
Right.
or just any ballet, which I did find out apparently Jai Courtney used to be in as well, the ballet. So didn't
I
know that
wonder if
about
that
him.
was I wonder if that was one of the reasons why they decided to put that in this in the script, maybe.
Yeah, Jai
I don't know.
Courtney's is like
I'm curious
it's
if that
eyes
was there before or not, you know. That Courtney
yeah.
goes, wouldn't it be really funny if this guy's a ballet dancer?
Yeah. I'll take it too. Like, I mean, again, in Russia, you have the whole thing. We obviously have like the Black Widows in Marvel movies are synonymous with ballet. And of course, even John Wick, now we have the
Ballerina,
ballerina with
that's right.
Ana de Armas as well. So it's like you could have Jai Courtney show up and doing some ballet. Like, why not? Instead of heavily reinforcing toxic masculinity norms like this movie is doing. Have Jack Mc have McClane be like, I don't talk to my son anymore because he's a ballet dancer and I find that weird. And then have at the end McClane been cool with his also badass CIA agent son who happens to also be undercover as a ballet dancer. Like there you go. Like instantly a better film to me right there.
It's not
But
too hard making this movie a better film by changing things. You
If you literally change anything about it, then it's
That's
better.
right.
So,
That's right. And he just starts like beating them as he's talking. You know, which sort of reminded me of, the scene in The Last Boy Scout
oh yeah.
where, the
Well,
guy keeps trying to give him the cigarette and then he keeps punching him every single time and he goes, "Do that again, I'll kill you." And he
the
does.
thing is, yeah. I also had yeah this the setup is very Last Boy Scout, but my note I it brought it to mind later for me when it's in this junk right where oh no it definitely is where McClane has his little like pretend laugh thing like oh you guys outfits are really working here and stuff like that, which is a really lazy insult. It's just very shoddy, like they just got nothing better. John McClane should be wittier than that, and again it's just like yeah in that scene in The Last Boy Scout.
It's Joe
That's
Hallenbeck.
funny.
There's exactly Joe Hallenbeck knows how to do that. He's
He,
good with his
it's
self-depreciating humor. He asks the guy, like,
Shane Black showing up to like even if that was a Shane Black first draft, it would be better because he's a better screenwriter. And it's just like yeah, that's a scene that sticks in your memory because it's distinct. I've not seen anyone do literally that scene since The Last Boy Scout, and it's like yeah, you can't do that better than that. And then this being like a kind of retread of it. But
it's
with
a
just
retread, but it
none
doesn't
of this,
work. That's the problem.
none of the sparkle, none of the wits, none of the effort. It feels like too, it's like you could have put like a crumb more of effort in to have that be a better line. That'd be a better to have McClane have a better joke. Just send it to someone to be like punch this up for me, so it's not just him mocking. They're like, well, they're just wearing black suits. Like, there's nothing wrong with what they're wearing either. Like, they're not in nice goofy outfits or anything. So it doesn't even work in that sense. Oh boy, it's
Right.
yes, it is a bad one, man.
And
It is a bad film.
both Jack and John are on the ground after getting hit by him, and the goons pick him up. And at the same time, Irina and Yuri and another goon leave, and they're going towards the helicopter. And you get a shot outside of the goon saying, "Come on, come on!" And then we're back inside with Alec, and he goes, "I prefer dancing, really, but killing is much, much better than working in a grocery shop." Like, what the hell? Like, what does that even mean?
I guess it's like I could have tried to make it as a dancer,
And then it
but
wouldn't have worked, so I would have had to work
it
in a
wouldn't have
grocery
worked.
store.
So I've been working in the grocery shop, so it's better for me to just be killing people. Like nah. It's like you gotta believe in
Great,
it. Maybe
great
that's so.
circular
It's
logic
a
there.
symptom of his not having any support growing up. He doesn't even believe that he would ever have been a successful dancer. It's like even if I had been allowed to go for it, I never would have made it.
That's it.
I think Jai Courtney's there going like, I never made it as a dancer, but like,
And he keeps.
is it better than I'm in Die Hard 5? No.
Probably not.
Like it's,
Probably
I
not.
probably should have, like, I would have been more help to people had I been in the grocery store. because right. then at least I would be providing a service to people rather than this.
That's right. Paper or plastic. You know.
Yeah.
And then he just keeps beating on both Jack and John. And John just starts laughing. And then after he gets hit, he goes, "Nice one."
Well, that's the because McClane starts laughing because he catches that Jack has
right.
this knife. Yeah,
correct.
Again, too, that's lazy as well. It's just like, yeah, he just has a thing on him. It's like they didn't frisk him, they didn't
that's
try
right.
to find the thing. Usually, it's action movie 101. You check the pockets, you check everything with these people before you do the zip ties. Like, it's just lazy as hell that he just has
That's
a thing
right.
on him.
And then Alec goes, "You guys, you're so arrogant. It's not 1986, you know. Reagan's dead." And then John just keeps laughing at him. And
Again, that feels so that's all tying back into what we were talking about last chunk as well. Like, this seems to be really trying to perpetuate, like, oh yeah, the 80s America and all that. But then, like, Die Hard wasn't until 88.
Right.
And it's like, I never really got a kind of like a Reaganomics thing. Well, I guess you could, like, there's a lot of, you know, there's a commentary in Die Hard about, like, the villains are kind of like yuppies, basically. Like, they're European, but they are essentially kind of ultra capitalist people who are obsessed with money and stuff, like money and status and high fashion and stuff like that. But this all really feels like, oh yeah, we're really bringing back the idea of like the great 19. If I think of Reagan in the movies, beyond the actual movies that Ronald Reagan was in, I think of like Rambo 2, because of, you know, Reagan saying, "Oh, I saw Rambo the other night, and I know what to do next time." Whereas Die Hard was like the counterbalance to all that, because like Rambo in cultural memory is like the epitome of insane hyper masculinity, where it's like they took a pretty good first movie that actually had a character with some depth, plotted him, and then just roided him up and made him into a giant killing machine. And then by the end of the 80s, you get a softening in the masculine kind of thing, though, of something like Die Hard. Is like, it's an action movie, but the guy's not built, he's not hyper masculine in that way. And he does become vulnerable. He's constantly vulnerable throughout the whole film and stuff. And then you move into things like, oh, you've got like Michael Keaton's Batman, where it's like, yeah, you know, he's a tough masculine guy, but it's also like, it's Michael Keaton, you know, it's not Arnold Schwarzenegger or Sylvester Stallone and stuff. So then just, yeah, for this then to bring it back to like, oh yes, we all know that I would hate Ronald Reagan and American and cowboys and stuff like this. It's like, again, you're too young for that to be a part of your cultural memory. And also, it doesn't really, it feels like the makers of this are conflating Die Hard with a different type of action movie. Like, they're thinking, oh yeah, like, John McClane is Rambo, right? And it's like, he's not Rambo. he's nothing like Rambo at all. But yeah, I'm going off on a bit of a rant tangent there, but like, that line really bugged me.
The actor who plays Alec, Raksha Bukvik, okay, was mm-hmm. born in 79. So he was only 7 when he's talking about this right now.
Yeah. It's like, I guess, you know, maybe in Ukraine. He's like, oh, we only now just got, like, she wore a yellow ribbon. You know, like, we're That's only right. getting the old Westerns over here now. So I understand Ronald Reagan's president these days. It's like, it was 35 years ago, asshole.
Yeah. Again, the whole conversation is really strange. And then John just keeps laughing.
No, and also, it might have worked again, even in, like, American cowboys, if this was during the Bush administration with George W. Bush, because then that was like, oh, it's like a crazy cowboy American president, et cetera, et cetera. But this is in, like, the Obama era. So again, it just feels like it's out of place and out of time. And it's like, really, like, and maybe if they're trying to make some sort of statement that John McClane himself is out of place and out of time, but he was never really part of all that. And plus, too, his son is just as big a hyper-masculine dick as he is.
Yeah.
So it just feels like they're both remnants from an old time. Like, it's in a time that it's, no, the whole thing just doesn't work for me at all. It doesn't. I see what they're going for, and it just doesn't click, because it's like, that's not what Die Hard is, though. But yeah. Anyhow, sorry. I keep interrupting.
That's okay. No, it's fine. And John just keeps laughing, and he goes, "Sorry. Oh God." And he just keeps laughing. And Alec goes to him, "What's so funny there?" He goes, I can't tell you. It's like, wait a minute, I can't tell you. It's like you need to give me stalling time to think of an answer. That's more or less
Yeah.
what it is.
It used to be like McClane's like, I used to be a lot wittier than I am now.
That's right. See, I'm 58. I'm starting
Yeah.
to have memory issues. I gotta try to figure this one out.
If this was like 95, I would have had a good comeback to that, but I don't got that.
That's
Like,
right. Back in the
even in
90s.
95, his even his bad comebacks were better than this, you know. But, yeah.
For John to be making up, and he says, I can't tell you. And then he goes, it's not you. He goes, I love these outfits. You guys are looking good. And they all just start laughing. And again, there's nothing to it. It's far too superficial, the whole thing.
Well, good. He did this in like Die Hard with a Vengeance, though. Where he did like a little laugh, and then Simon
Where
was
you're talking
laughing
about
with
with
him,
Simon, yeah.
and yeah, and then then the comeback though, like your brother was an asshole.
And he goes,
That has
yes,
it's
he
a
was.
simple line, but it has a lot of clout to it, this stuff as well. And then Jeremy Irons' reaction of like a little so stilted, and then person out laughing, I'm like, you're right, he was an asshole. You had his number. Like it's very simple, but it's so much better than like, because this is like the outfits again. The outfits they're wearing are totally fine, and it's also like it just feels like a guy grasping at like I got nothing. I got nothing as an actor to work with. Because the screenwriters haven't written me anything here. Like I've just got, it's all hollow. Just like we just need to get from this point to this point, so he can burst out, and then we can do a big action scene.
Yeah, and then I mean the action scene's about to come, and
Yeah.
then Alec goes, okay, that's enough, thank you, and then he goes, let's dance, and then as he says let's dance, then John and Jack, who has somehow managed to when he was on the ground, he took out a switchblade from his boot, which again is a little strange that he's able to do it if he has his hands tied behind his back, but okay. Forget about that. He's a contortionist. He's able to do these things. That's fine. And then
And
he
also that
somehow.
they didn't check his boot. Like
That's right.
it's a standard thing.
That's right. Especially since it looked as if it was something that was just clipped on his boots. It's not like it was dug deep inside of his boot or something like that. Something that can
Yeah.
easily
This
theoretically be seen.
is a thing, like again, in other films or stuff like that, like Hannibal Lecter, how does he get out of his things? Like they set up a thing, it's like, oh, he took the pen from
That's
he
right.
set up a little thing, a little clever twist. The Joker in The Dark Knight, how did he get the glass together? It's like Batman banged his head into a window. He took that shard of glass.
That's
That's
right.
where he got that from. This is just like, yeah, he just it's the screenwriter. It's like he just has a knife in his boot. It's like, wouldn't they check him when they frisk him? Should we think of something? Maybe he got like there was a splinter from something or other, and it's no, just get it over
Well,
with.
John did that in Die Hard with a Vengeance. He had the splinter in his arm.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's instantly like more of a much more like, oh, like just by sheer chance and sheer luck and the ingenuity of John McClane, he got out of that scenario. And this is just like the laziness of everyone from the soldiers coming and taking them hostage to the screenwriter, to the director, to even like the delivery. Because even Bruce's laugh just sounds off as well.
That's right.
Like it just doesn't, the whole thing just rings so, just so hollow,
Right.
Yeah,
And then John like gets up and he charges at Alec and knocks him down. And then Jack is on the ground. He's opened up he's able to cut through his ties with the knife that he has, and then somehow he shoots someone. Now, where did the gun come from? We don't see him take a gun from someone. It's as if he has this James Bond type of switchblade that also can shoot a round or two. I don't know.
It turns in there's a switchblade that turns into a gun that turns into jam trousers.
It's a transformer. It's a transforming knife. I don't know. It's just very strange.
I guess it's supposed to be just like it's an action movie. I guess there's like 50 guns just lying around in that room, presumably, because it's like it's just a
But
and then.
when you look at it carefully, you don't see him like roll on the ground and pick up one of their guns, that had been thrown on the ground that he kicked away.
Yeah.
Because it also looks
It's
like he's shooting. It looks again. It's hard to tell because it really goes by fast, as if he's shooting a pistol. So it's like, okay, where did he get the pistol from?
It could be that the bad guys, though, because they so didn't frisk him, he just has a pistol in his pocket. They just didn't check. He's like, oh no, I got like what else in my pocket? I've got like a hunting knife on my other boot. I've got like yeah, freaking like a I've got a, like an AK-47 strapped to my back. These guys didn't check anything, you know?
Right. He just maybe he's able to like maybe when he stabbed the guy, he pulled the gun from him at the same time. He's like that dexterous, you know, that he's
Yeah.
able to swipe a guy with the switchblade and at the same time pull out take out his gun. I don't know.
Yeah. It's I guess I think it's just like you're not supposed to think about it. But it's just like you're not supposed to think about anything in
Yeah,
this
but that's
movie.
why you do a movie minutes by minute because you want to be able to talk about it.
Yeah, but usually they give you the stuff they give you something to work with. But here it's just like no, it's just like it's all surface. It's all just like it's literally just trying to get to the big helicopter bit as fast as they can, I guess.
That's right. And then John and Jack are able to take out some of the men, and then they jump behind the bar.
I will give a shout out. There's that one henchman with
The white hair,
the bleached, kind of bleached flat top. He looks like a very 80s, like a classic 80s movie henchman. I'll give that guy that. I've got him marked down here as Billy Guile-do, because he's a kind of cross between Billy Idol and Guile from Street Fighter. So Billy Guile-do is the guy. I see you, man. Like you're not quite, you know, some of the Gruber henchmen from the first ones, because they were all iconic. But this guy's at least, you know, he's carving a path out there at least where like I'll remember him.
Maybe that's like the connection. This is one of the guys who used to work for Hans Gruber, you know, 30 years earlier.
Yeah. Or his brother was that or something like that. He's just like, I
Something like
always
that.
wanted McClane revenge against John McClane, and then he gets killed in like 5 seconds as soon as he gets in there.
That's right. And then the two of them are behind the bar, and they start this crazy conversation because then John says, "Jack, remember the last time we talked just before you went away? Oh no. You're not gonna open up to me right before we die. No, that's not your thing, John." He goes, "Well, what's my thing?" He goes, "Fucking killing bad guys, that's your thing. You're not gonna die today." So
It's not a good
again,
day. Too damn hard, you
terrible,
know.
terrible dialogue here. It makes no sense whatsoever. It also shows us what Jack seems to think about his father. You
Yeah,
know,
yeah.
that his father,
Where's he
you know,
getting that from? Like, what is
well,
it? Is was John
because he's
McClane was
growing
he
up.
just regaling him with tales of all the guys he killed?
That's right.
What
He's
happened there?
as he's growing up, he hears, okay, well, dad killed, you know, 11 guys in Nakatomi, and then, you know, the year later, he was in the airport in Dulles and was able to kill another X number of bad guys, and then,
Yeah.
you know, a few years later, he was, you know, that. Those are the bedtime stories that John used to tell Jack.
Think it'll be like going to like if the McLeans were like a religious family going to confession and just like hearing outside the confessional box his dad and like, yeah, so I killed this one guy then where there's the petrol was leaking from the plane and I like got a lighter and then I like you know the lighter and it blew up the plane. It was pretty cool, I'm not gonna lie, you know. But then I swore after that because I said yippee ki-yay motherfucker, and the priest's just like, well, it's a terrible sin, my son. But that was pretty cool, though, to be fair, you know. And his son's outside, like, oh man, that's all my dad does is fucking kill bad guys, apparently.
That's all he does, and that's what he's good
Yeah.
at. He's not good at being a dad. He's good at killing bad guys. That's all he's good at.
He's done it in high concentrations 4 times prior, but I guess in between all the other Die Hard movies, McClane is just on a constant rampage of killing bad guys. Like
Right.
he never, it's all he does.
That's right. And then the two of them think of a great idea at the same time. They subliminally are connected, and they say, "Hey, wait a second. You know, this is a Die Hard movie that doesn't have enough glass shattering. So let's just completely take out all of the windows on the ceiling of this place and just have all the glass, you know, come showering down on the bad guys, even though we'll be safe."
Yeah,
You know,
yeah.
and that's all they do. They just start shooting and shooting and shooting. And glass, 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 glass. None of the bad guys
They could have done.
are killed by the glass. But two of them are you know a little confused, and then John and Jack are able to shoot both of them.
Yeah. Such an opportunity, though, for the fact that they're having a little thing behind the table before doing that. You could have had a thing of like, you know what to do, Jack. Like, what? Just shoot the glass. Like, just have a little throw, like, and then McClane be like, oh, now I've become my own worst enemy and stuff. But
That's it.
yeah, he's using Gruber tactics here.
Dice and feast him. What?
They could
Dice
have,
and feast
yeah.
him. What? Shoot the glass. Ah, okay.
That'd be I could have had a thing where, like, to get the knife out of his boot, Jack had to take off a boot, and then there's glass over the floor, and then McClane been like, "Didn't I teach you anything?" You know, that kind of thing. Like, then John like tapping this, like, he's got
Like
like
father, like
his
son.
boot, yeah, he's got his boots like duct taped on. He's like, "All these things aren't going anywhere. Like, I never take these off now." But yeah, it's there's plenty of opportunity. Not even as good of like, in Die Hard 4, just that the Johnson and Johnson joke coming back, like a little nod like that. You don't have to fill your film with nods, but like when you're literally copying things from the other ones too, like just give a little bit of a little bit of a continuity thing over
Well,
here.
we talked about it before that the Johnson and Johnson line isn't really a good line because John never met Johnson or Johnson.
Oh, I guess that's true. Yeah. Oh, I never thought of it that way. I just liked it as a thing of like, and then I was just thinking, oh, he must have heard them over the radio or something at some point. But I guess unless Powell was just telling them afterwards, because I guess because they became friends, so he would have met them. He's like, oh, outside there's these two FBI guys. They're both called Johnson. It was weird. And so, but then my name's Reginald Vale Johnson. It adds a whole other layer to the whole thing, you know.
And then at this point we see that Alec has run away, like a good little bad guy does. He emerges on the roof and tells the pilot to take off. He goes go, and then we're back with John and Jack and then Jack goes, "We're finished, John." And then we see the helicopter flying around also. And then Jack goes, "I can't believe this. I can't believe this. This is unbelievable." He goes, "Jack, hey." He goes, "Jesus," because they see that the helicopter is starting to come back towards them. Now, is this when Jack gets upset, he like sort of turns over a table and stuff like that. Do you think this is like a callback to Carl getting upset about the fact that he didn't kill John after finding out that Tony was killed?
It could be. It could. You just need like, just like so somewhere. You just get Holly just like pricking up on her sofa, and then like she can feel the reverberations of the table flipping, and she's just like, "Only one man could piss off someone that much."
That's
Like,
right.
it's like,
The guy I was married to.
yeah, it's like there's a fa like a McLean family intuition going on. Like, oh, John and Jack are together, and it's pissed them off. Yeah, that all feels right. I guess yeah, it would be like John has been like, I don't like seeing this in you because I saw it in one other guy before. But then, it also kind of gives like the vibe of like McClane, you raised this kid, you know. If he's going around flipping out and stuff, it's probably because it's learned behavior, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily say that John seems to be someone who you think would have like rage issues. He doesn't act that way. He just has, issues with bad guys,
Yeah. That's why he has to kill so many of them. He just,
No, that's just the good nature in him.
yeah. I don't know. I can imagine he would be like the fights with Holly would like they wouldn't be like he wouldn't be like throwing things around and stuff like that. But I can imagine he'd have very his voice has been raised in that house many, many times. I get
Okay,
the vibe
no,
of
that
it.
is
Yeah,
possible.
yeah.
That's right.
So because it
That's
might
right. That's
feel
because,
volatile. I don't
because
think
she
he
says,
would.
your problem is your understanding of what our marriage is.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But it's again, it's all communication issues with
That's
McClane.
right.
It's like, if he could just talk more or just reach out more, but it's not a hugging family as we know. So maybe, and
Nope,
then
not at all.
because it's not such a not it's so not a hugging family. What does Jack grow up? It's like, I can't go for any sort of intimate contact or communicate properly with my father. So all I know how to do is flip out and flip tables over. and let's, vent my frustration that way. So then it
That's
is McClane's fault again. Like, it's like, yeah, you should have been a better dad.
true. True. And then we see we get about a minute of the helicopter making this U-turn, trying to come back towards them, and the music, gets a little tenser. But I gotta say, this feels like overkill the way that they're doing this.
Yeah. Like I said, it has to be like every film has to up the ante, So it's like the last one was like, yeah, fighting on the wing of a Harrier jet. Now it's just like, what was the one? It's like it's a giant military helicopter has to come and
That's
destroy the
right, and
building. Yeah.
then just opens fire and only shoots the floor that they're on.
Yeah. That's Although in many ways it could be like, well, John McClane is exceptionally hard to kill, so if you gotta do this, then it actually kind of tracks to me. Like, oh, you gotta shoot your shot, even if it's out of a giant, military helicopter.
Right. That's true. We gotta, it's you're gonna kill that ant by using too much
Yeah, just
yeah, again, it's complete
napalm the
overkill.
garden just to kill that one ant. Yeah,
That's
that's
right.
what they're going for.
That's right. That's what makes sense. So thankfully that's where this segment ends. We've made it through another 5 minutes of this movie. Thankfully, we don't have that much left. Well, as of now, we have 46 more minutes to get through this movie. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting. Did you have anything else you wanted to add about this particular segment?
No, I think we've said more about Die Hard 5 than it's worth, quite
Yeah,
frankly.
probably. All right. So today's segment is called Franchise Fever, where my guests will give their top five movie franchises that have at least four entries into it. So, Niall, start with your number five and work your way up.
Well, number five, this one was actually quite tough for me. Because the thing with franchises is that, like, not every film's gonna be a winner, and stuff like that. But then the ones I ended up landing on, it was just a real like, oh man, which one of these is better than the other and stuff. So I've got and I should preface this with this is a I'm talking original crew here, okay? So my first is Star Trek. But I'm talking like Star Trek's 1 through 6. Like once it gets into like generations and stuff like that. I don't know if you consider that cheating to have a cutoff point to be like, I'm only
No, it's
talking
fine.
about original
Again,
entropy.
the points, Star Trek is going to get the points regardless. It doesn't matter what incarnation of Star Trek is. I'm not going to
Yeah, but this.
differentiate between that.
But as a franchise though, because it's, now it's in a bit of a sort of, in terms of cinematic releases, it's in a bit of a sort of shambles in terms of like. It's up, it's down, it's up, it's down, and stuff like that. But it did have a very consistent, in my eyes, to be fair, six, well, 5 out of 6 of those first movies were like all pretty good to me. The first one's obviously, people poo-poo a lot, but it's a big pretentious. It's trying to be 2001 is the problem. But then, and of course, but I find that's totally fine. If you watch that on the biggest screen possible, it is a big wonder to behold. Like it's very much like it's designed to be seen as a cinematic spectacle rather than like, something more character driven and exciting and stuff like that. And then from I always very much admired the through line they had then from Wrath of Khan, considering too that Star Trek, the original TV show, was not like a serialized thing. But they do have a continuing story from Wrath of Khan right up through the end of the fourth film. And then it comes back in the sixth film. So I think that's incredibly, considering those guys are with those characters for so long and they could only do so much in the television format, which is weird now because television is where character work lives and breathes. It's like, you can do so much in television in terms of like giving characters, so much development and stuff like that. The nature of the original Star Trek show was just like, no, these guys just stay the same, basically. And you get their relationships well conveyed, but it doesn't progress further than that. And then in those films, they actually revisited the characters and they have proper arcs with them. And the stories are, even the films they people say are bad or silly or things like that are always good to me. I love Search for Spock. Then the fourth movie about like it's them going back in time. It's about space whales. Should be stupid. It delivers on every front. It's a fantastic film and stuff. So I think yeah, it really goes to show the intimate work between all the cast, but also just like the three guys of Shatner, Nimoy, and DeForest Kelly. It's like they're all in fantastic form. They're the best they've been in their entire careers. So Star Trek original crew film franchise. Of course, that ends on on the sixth entry, the Undiscovered Country, which is just like a absolutely, it's just fantastic, very complicated political thriller, but great note to go out on and stuff, and would have benefited everyone. I was like, let's just stop making Star Trek movies there, but they continued, and like what.
It's not making Star Trek movies
Yes.
because it wasn't the original cast anymore, except for the little cameos in Generation. That was it.
And it's also like, well, people will be like, well, First Contact and stuff, and you're like, yeah, I can sacrifice First Contact if they just stop making the movies. I wouldn't take away the Next Generation for the world, but like I could live without the Next Generation films, like that's if you just went like cinematically, Star Trek ended in like 1989 or whenever it was. But then up next is.
It was 90, the sixth one came out in 91.
Well, 91. Oh, wow. For some reason, I just thought it ended in the 80s. Then I'll go in for another movie, franchise I've revisited. And it kind of goes off the rails, but it's always entertaining. And such a lovable character. But I'm going to go for Rocky. And I'm not a sports person by any means. I'm not a boxing person, but I do love those Rocky movies. It's like, and to go from like, yeah, quite a gritty, but and believable down to earth sort of proper film, and then it goes to like he literally ends the Cold War in a flamboyant straight of feat of vengeance and super strength and whatnot. To then bring it back down. That is one I'll continue into like the Creed franchise and stuff as well. Like Rocky into Creed is a great passing of a torch, and it's a really it's a deft, a story that successfully kept running since 1976. That
Right. I'm a fan of the first two Creed movies. The third one I didn't like because they basically, took Rocky out of it.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, it's the whole. It's a very unfortunate thing in the reality that Stallone's had to step back, and that he's having all his problems with like with the Winklers, you call those guys. Like they're having like all his post his behind the scenes drama. This again an ongoing story since like Rocky II. Like the resentment that those guys have all been simmering towards each other. Has now boiled over into like, yeah, he's been removed from his own franchise. But I would say Creed 3, though, beyond that, is a great film, though, to be fair. I was very, very pleasantly surprised by like, and the fact that Michael B. Jordan stepping up and actually directing it, and you're like, man, he did a freaking great job as well. And I love the fact, too, you can even see like behind the scenes stuff as well of like from Stallone losing ownership of his own characters. And then him being a guy who worked with Ryan Coogler, and now Ryan Coogler's got this giant hit with Sinners. But his big thing before the movie even came out, the headlines were like Ryan Coogler he's worked out this deal that he will get the rights to this franchise, like that as a IP back. And people are like, why the hell would he want to do that? And it's like it's because he's been hanging around with Sylvester Stallone, and he sees what happens. That's why he's done that. So you can even sort of the ongoing stories within the franchise Bones itself, behind the scenes is interesting as well. But like, yeah, the Rocky movies to me are always good. Like even the ones people say are bad, like Rocky Five. I'm like Rocky Five is pretty decent to be fair, and then they essentially kind of remake it in Creed, which is weird. But people love Creed. It's like it's Rocky Five again. I always find it to be like a thoroughly entertaining watch any of the Rocky films and whatever when it's going for like crazy bullshit montage and overkill, all that it's still fun. when it's fun, it's fun. When it's been serious and emotional and they're actually hitting the notes, it's terrific because in that character, Stallone has created like one of the most lovable underdogs, in cinema history in Rocky Balboa. The fact that I was so like on the edge of my seat when he came, came into Creed and it was like Rocky has cancer and you're like, if you can't kill this guy in front of me, I can't watch Rocky die. I was so like heavily invested, like don't bring him back just to kill him and stuff. Whereas they bring back like Han Solo and he gets stabbed, you're like, eh, well, whatever. Like you've
That's right.
I know Harrison Ford's out anyway, so it was a different vibe altogether for me. But yeah, so Rocky, I'll put down there as my number four.
Okay.
And then number three, I'll put in another one still ongoing to this day, and it's different iterations, and it's always entertaining. Planet of the Apes. I don't know. Are you a big Planet of the Apes fan, Rob?
I like the recent one, the recent reboot. I guess you can call it the recent, but I like the first movie that they did in it because they made it seem so plausible that it could happen.
You're talking about
You know, and that was
the ones that
just, you know,
like.
the whole idea of okay, let's try and create a medication that's gonna work for Alzheimer's, and in the end it does something else, and like all these different things. I like the way that they did that, how they started the whole thing. I haven't been the biggest fan of the latest ones. In the series, again, they look beautiful. There's no question about it. But the story is somewhat lacking,
No, okay, that's fair enough.
in my
I'm
opinion. But okay.
talking about like even from back in 68, whenever like, was it 68 or 69 when the first one came out. I think that all Planet of the Apes movies are good to me. Even it's a thing too. I love the fact that it keeps coming back because it just seems to be down to, and it keeps still somehow always making money. And the only thing I can think of is like people love monkeys and a horse. If you put a monkey and a horse, people are going to show up to that. Like it's just they're just like I've got nothing to do this weekend. It's like a movie on. It's got monkeys and horses. Like oh, we gotta get to it. There's people going out to see new Planet of the Apes movies who were like would never even think about watching the originals, but they're just
That's
like,
right.
was it apes running around on horses with guns? Yeah, come on, let's go, let's do it. But yeah, so I love the original one. The original one is actually just like a very thoughtful, really well done sci-fi movie. I love then that it's really bonkers, pretentious, dry sequel is really boring and pretentious and insane, where it's just like, oh, there's nuclear bomb and there's humans with giant heads and stuff. I'm like, this like, I love kitschy 70s sci-fi that's really swinging and trying for something. It's trying to make a big statement about environmentalism and like, the fate of nuclear war and stuff like that. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's boring, but like, I'm still enthralled by what you're doing here. And I love the emotional complexity and the relationship of Cornelius and Zira and then them going back in time and that little flip, like them flipping the script on the franchise then. And I love then seeing the rise of Caesar through again, the immortal Roddy McDowall, Ricardo Montalban, all that. Like, and then see, the budgets are going down, but the ideas and the passion from McDowall still there. And then yeah, leave out the Tim Burton one. Good makeup, that's about it. And then yeah, the newer iterations with is that what we call the guys? Rupert Sanders did the first one or something, I think was the and then Matt Reeves takes over for. Dawn of the Rise of the Battle of the Planet of the Apes or whatever they call it after that point. But the second one that the first one Matt Reeves took over for, I remember thinking it was an exceptional piece of work. Like that was such a really well done, again, very realistic kind of thing of like, well, if apes were gained sentience and we're trying to essentially were to build up to a war with the humans. It really felt like, yeah, this feel. I'm 100% invested in this being the way that it would go down, kind of, and also just the complexities of like Caesar trying to marry the two worlds, and it's all Andy Serkis doing a phenomenal performance as a CGI ape. Again, Gary Oldman showed up doing great work. And then, yeah, the third one in that trilogy wasn't the best, but it still, you know, emotionally brought it home and stuff. And the fact too that then afterwards it's like, we're doing a brand for the Planet of the Apes again. I'm like, keep them going, man. Keep going with as many, get as many monkeys and horses as you possibly can. I'll show up for all of them. So yeah, I love we still got goofy, silly 60s sci-fi is managed to continue into the modern era with something just called Planet of the Apes, you know. But and the fact that all of them have so much stuff to say. They've all got very, you know, every movie has some sort of socio-political statement as well. That's always really woven into the text, and I really admire that about them. So, and then the last two, just complete nostalgia fest fun for me. Number two is Nightmare on Elm Street, another franchise that like drastically varies in quality. I absolutely love all of them. Are you a big Elm Street fan, Rob? Like the
No, not at all. I'm not a horror fan at all.
Oh God, that's a
That's
shame.
first of all. But I did love as a kid, Dream Warriors number three.
It's the
So
best of them. It is the best one for sure.
that's the one that always, sticks in my mind.
Yeah. I think I'm very married to Elm Street in a kind of like, because I wasn't allowed to watch them as a kid, but it was a cultural, Freddy was still a cultural force at the time, so it was like forbidden fruit, you know, of we used to have the it's probably still, because I'm at my dad's at the moment, actually staying over for the week. We used to have the novelizations of the first three films came as like a bumper pack. And it's that book's probably still in this house somewhere, actually. And I remember reading the novelizations for the first three films years before I saw them, and reading them over and over again. So much so then when I got to it, I was like, it looks like this? That's the music? What the hell? And it'd been a very jarring experience. I'm like, that's what Freddy Krueger sounds like? And then been like thinking that Lawrence Fishburne was playing this one character, and it turned out he was playing this really minor character. It's like, I thought this guy was Lawrence Fishburne. What the hell's going on? But and all the scenery around it though, the video covers, again, you know, and the whole vibe of the era of Freddy back when I was a kid that I wasn't allowed to engage in, has a real. And then when I did finally see them all, I found discovered they're a lot campier than I thought, and they do have this very eerie, dreamlike vibe about all of them, and I love that even more. So I just love it as a franchise, and my main thing with it as well is that like I am a horror movie guy, and I love just you know, so many different horror franchises, but Elm Street's always my favorite because they really get creative with the stuff. Even during the bad ones, they're like, what can this guy do? We've got such an open landscape to create like this death tableau, basically. And so that's how you're getting like people turned into meatballs and pizzas. That's how you're getting like a guy literally going into a comic book. That's how you're getting Freddy killing a guy with the Nintendo Power Glove. You know, it's like you can go into like, oh, they never lays out with them. They always go, no matter how bad the rest of the film might be, they're like, we need to step up and do like a big death, you know, a practical effect based crazy death scene that has to be different from anything we've done before. And they always deliver on it. So I'm just like, yeah, even in like, and sometimes even when they get lazy, where they just have to be like, oh yeah, we had a thing planned, but the money ran out. So now it's just Freddy's the Invisible Man, and we got the glove on like wires flying towards a guy. That's so silly that it's like, yeah, I even love that as well. So there's something very inherent in the aesthetic, the nostalgia, and the whole vibe of the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise, that when they essentially kind of brought it back for like that last season of Stranger Things, where I was just like in the first, you know, opening episode, I was like, this is, they're just doing Freddy Krueger. Like, I love this. Like, what? It's just crazy to me that Freddy Krueger has died as a character too. That they were so popular for so long, and it was so such an ongoing thing that it's just died to death, and he doesn't seem to be coming back at all. It's a franchise very dear to me. I was considering even doing like Nightmare on Elm Street Minute and stuff at one point as well. Might still happen
Yeah,
down the line. Like
that'll be
it's
very interesting to do.
yeah, it's just there because so many of the people though in it didn't go on to do like the first one's like Oh yeah, Johnny Depp. I guess he went on to do stuff, but and most of the actors in the Elm Street movies don't go on to do anything else. So like in terms of like so much movie by then stuff is like you get into the careers of the actors, and then some of them are like, no, they all died of death, man. They went down with Freddy, I guess. And so many of the other directors stuff. But oh, it's a, no, I absolutely love the that sort of that VHS black box feel of the Elm Street franchise. And then I'm gonna see if you can take a wild swing at what my number one's gonna be, Rob, considering who I am and what I do.
It's gonna be Scream, right? Or the
I do love Scream
Muppets.
actually as well. Scream Minute is another thing I very much want to do. But no.
Yeah, no,
It,
it's obviously it's gonna be Superman. I know. That's
yeah, yeah. Because the Man of Steel himself, the
yeah.
guy on everyone's lips this summer.
That's right. Yes, so Batman. Well,
Yes,
obviously.
of course, yeah. And I'm talking like, yeah. Again, it's all Batman films. I'll keep it to the first four just for like the sake of keeping things neat. But like, yeah, Batman is a character. Like I pontificated about how much I love him and his world so much in my own show. People obviously can go listen to that anytime you want. But yeah, Batman again, it's because it runs the gamut. Again, it goes from you can make a dead serious, noirish, like hard drama out of a Batman film, or you can make the goofiest, campiest, silliest thing ever. A film that in Batman and Robin that people to this day are calling one of the worst films ever made, and I look at it and it's like it's perfect. Like it's not perfect, but it's like it knows what it is, and it's going for like it's just it covers this such a wide range of those first four movies, going from like it starts as like a detective noir thing, it morphs into like Dick Tracy, but with Phantom of the Opera thrown in. The second one's like a weird Tim Burton circus movie. And then it just turns into like, oh, like neon, incredibly fetishistic neon toy commercial. Like it's just everything about it. It's just, it's never afraid to take wild, wild swings. And then Batman is a character himself. And I just love that he's just like a gloomy, mysterious, dark figure. That's also like on the counterbalance, a big figure of hope and stuff as well. Again, the fact, all the stuff, just the simple things that people always talk about with Batman, and that like, his superpower is essentially being rich, but it's also just his tenacity and that he's just he doesn't give up, and he really trusts his own judgment. He's clearly not a healthy guy, but he's still doing things for the good of the people and stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, like
Because
it's
fighting crime takes its toll on your body.
yeah, and it's just all stuff too, where it's like it revives me. It revives me, and it revives itself so many times, like in the fact that like. I was doing that minute, and then you're talking about in such in-depth stuff, and you're like, at the end, you're like, oh, well, I'm tired of talking about that now. Like, I'm ready to give that a break for a bit. And then we did that just, we were just finishing Batman and Robin, I want to say, when the Batman arrived. So at that point, I kind of limped into that film going, like, yeah, whatever, I'm sure it'll be okay. And, I was just like, oh, I'm Batmaned out. I need a space, so that I can regroup and then I'll come back to it. But then went into that movie like opening day, and within the first 10 minutes, when it was just doing so much Batman-y stuff, of like all the shots of like the criminals around Gotham, and then the voice, the for the first time we have Batman voiceover talking about like the fact that they think I'm in the shadows, but I am the shadows and stuff like that, and the music slowly building and just like. That one guy running out of the holding up a liquor store, running out, it's about to run down a dark alley, and then stopping himself, and then looking up and seeing the bat signal, and then freaking out and running away because he realizes like Batman could be in there. And I was just like, tears in my eyes have been like, oh, this is it. This is everything. I love this franchise so much. The fact then that like I've seen a billion Batmobiles, and yet when they just did that little thing of like, you just forgot that it was going to be in the movie. And then you hear it rev up, and then you just see Robert Pattinson, like, and the Penguin looking over and being like, "Holy crap! What's this? He's got a friggin' rocket car and stuff like." It's just like, oh. And then again, it's like a guy who's talked about Batman for endless hours, and I saw that scene in the cinema, and in my mind, I was like, "It's the Batmobile!" Like I was so excited about it and stuff. And it's yeah, it's just it does like that.
Nobody in the theater
Not.
knew that they were getting when they were gonna have Niall in the theater with them.
Yeah, it always does it for me. Even like the lesser movies, like the like Batfleck, Dawn of Justice isn't a great movie by any stretch of the imagination. But like that opening scene though, those cops going into that warehouse and seeing a batarang sticking out of the wall, and like the trafficking victims like closing the cage again and going like, no, it's still here, and them talking about Bat, the creature of Batman is still here, and them being freaked out by him as well. It's like all that's just like this is phenomenal. I could never get tired of it. I just love the and there's never been bad Batman music. Every time someone delivers a Batman score, it's always phenomenal. Like they always people always step up for this guy. And yeah, it's just entrenched in me in such a way of like I'm sure if I went to a psychiatrist and try to get out why I like that I love this guy so much. Not just Batman the character, but the whole world. Like everything about it, like all the any of the villains, I'm like I have time for all of them, man. It's just something inbuilt in me. But like, but yeah, like, because a lot of the time too, when people ask me to do like top five lists and stuff for shows, I try to stay away from stay away from Batman. It's like, oh well, they know, but this one's like, no, I can't have it not be the top one. Like it's
Obviously,
100%.
I completely understand that.
Yeah,
All
but
right.
there you go. That's my
Thank
list.
you. Thank you for that list.
Say, could you give me a Wikipedia list of franchises that exist? Didn't know that there's multiple. It's a Mad, 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 Mad Worlds. I had no idea there were sequels to that. And I just wanted to let people know in case they weren't aware, there are eight Beethoven movies. Eight. There's eight Beethoven films. I think I seen Beethoven the Third back in like 1992. And didn't think that it continued. Apparently, there's freaking eight of them. So, yeah, the Beethoven franchise more successful than Die Hard, someone say. In terms of, I don't know if they made worse sequels after their fifth iteration than Die Hard 5, but you know, who's to say, right?
Who knows? You never know. All right. So let us once again play State Your Motto. So your state for today is New York.
All right, I think I might get this one. New York is so it permeates media so much. I might have actually heard this one before.
Okay, so your choices are Hope, Thus Always to Tyrant, or Excelsior.
Okay, so I don't know for sure. It's just hope is just one of them. Like it's just the word hope. Okay. I'm gonna say Excelsior just because of its Marvel connections, Stan Lee, but then so much of the Marvel stuff is set in New York. And I think Stan Lee was a New York guy. So maybe that's where he got that from. I'm gonna take a swing with Excelsior.
And you would be correct. It is Excelsior.
Hey.
And
Nice, nice.
Excelsior is a Latin word that is translated into English as ever upward.
I just like now the recent the most recent iteration of Superman, their motto being "Look up" is basically like they're stealing Marvel's thing again. I guess not steal. Well, they always rob off each other, but then for them to be like, "Yeah, our new catchphrase is look up," it's basically Excelsior. But you no one else knows that, right? But is that where like is Stan Lee? Is it because he's just a big New York guy that he just wanted to have a
That I
little?
couldn't tell you.
Yeah. It's but no, there you go. I'm gonna choose to believe that's what it is, and that's why like so many of the Marvel things are all set in the ever getting destroyed New York.
Exactly. All right. Excellent. So, Niall, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
I'll go and I've done so much plugging for Batman this episode. I'll go for our other podcast. Because me and John, my co-host on Batman, we also did a side project called Miami Minutes, where we talked about each minute of the 1987 Craptacular Taekwondo classic, Miami Connection, which is a film with a very colorful history, very hilarious colorful history, and I highly recommend everyone just look into it and check it out, and check out the show too. As I kind of alluded to there earlier in this episode, like sometimes when you hit on films that don't have people who went on to do anything, it can be tough getting material for minute by minute stuff. And nobody in Miami Connection did anything at that film because it died a death. But me and John, we did a successfully did like 89 minutes, I think, or thereabouts of, or 89 plus odd episodes of us getting just creating our own backstory and lore for everything around my Miami Connection. And yeah, great time. No guests, it's just the two of us. And it was a lot of fun. I miss doing it now. We ended that quite a while ago, so we got to get something else back up to take its place. But
So why don't you can talk about A Good Day to Die Hard.
no, after our spoilers for the end of your episode here, Rob. I will be back, but after that episode, I will never talk about A Good Day to Die Hard ever again in my
Never
life. I
say
don't
never
think.
say never.
That also feels like I could have been a Die Hard. So never say never, Die Hard would be like another one of the ever the descending order of the how crap those titles were getting as it went on.
Could be.
You
All
only
right.
die hard twice. I think I'll
Maybe.
just turn them into James Bond. Why
Now you're
not?
just turning into James Bond movies, exactly.
Yeah.
Die Hard Finger. I don't know.
Die Hard Eye or something. The living die lights. The living die hard
Maybe.
lights.
There you go. There you go.
The
All
die
right.
harding lights.
And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you could send it to movieroundminute@movierob.net. So everyone have a great weekend. Niall will have a little bit of time to wind down from having just talked about 10 minutes of this terrible movie in order to give him a little more energy to come back on Monday to once again talk with me about another 5 minutes of this movie. So until then, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one, no.